This is the Lambda Cartel, episode 11. With me is John Best, and I'm your host, Pablo Rivera. John grew up in Northeast Ohio. He is fascinated by tech, and he started programming at age 14. I would say that you started writing bugs at age 14. and he wants to learn what he doesn't know. I think in that regard, John and I have a lot in common. And I want to say John has been one of the earliest Lambda Cartel supporters. That's why I wanted him to be the first person to be interviewed in this podcast. We've usually just had people, other members for the Lambda Cartel just talk. But today, this is all about John and learning about his journey. So, John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty psyched. You know, I'm pretty pumped to be here talking with you and to, you know, be able to get to this point on our journey to say that we're past the 2 month milestone, which for me is 2 months more than we would have normally we were expected to last. So always a new day is awesome. So John, you started coding, programming at age 14.
Yeah.
Tell me about your journey.
Yeah. So a little bit of preamble. I got my first computer when I was about 7 years old, and that would have been about mid 1997.
Wow.
So I fell in love with the whole kind of Windows 95 and, oh my goodness, look what I can do. You know, mm-hmm. And ever since I just was always hungry for knowledge in general, and I got really good at sort of knowing how to fix things. And when I was 12, I started, you know, learning how to do it professionally, like being a professional technician. So I was pretty good at it for being, you know, 12.
But... let me stop you right there, because yeah. I know people who are way older than us, or even younger, whatever, right? I know people of different ages, and they're just terrible at computers, because some people just don't really have the skill set, but others don't really care about them. So at age 12, I guess that's a really great age to be tinkering with computers. So
yeah,
I'd say that you were your best. And this is not a pun based on your last name. You were your best at 12 years old. I personally say that I peaked at around 13 when it came to my tech abilities. So, so you were you actually work with hardware. You dealt general IT problems.
Yep. Wow. One of the book series I got was Upgrading and Repairing PCs.
Oh, and, I know that one. The hardcover?
Yep.
Like burgundy and cream color.
Yep.
It's like thousands and thousands pages.
Yep. Each edition is like 1,500 pages, but it's like...
I still have it.
Yep.
I actually still have it. It's like from 99, 2000.
Yeah.
Holy wow.
Yeah, I still have digital PDFs of my first edition that I ever had.
Wow,
and that's amazing. I buy a new edition every year just to, you know.
That's amazing. The fact that we have a lot in common. You're a little younger than me. That's the only problem I see.
Yeah, I mean. Nobody likes at age 27, I guess.
You know, it's one of those ages where you're not old enough to be considered, you know, old, but you're not young enough to be considered hip. So, you know, you're like the ham of the sandwich. You know, either be bread or be cheese, but don't be ham. So, you know, I also started at age 7. I had a Commodore 64, so I really didn't have an operating system, right? Mm-hmm. I just had BASIC.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had the big Commodore manual.
Yep. I had one when I was 10, so.
You had a C64 when you were 10?
Yep.
Wow. I mean, we're literally best friends right now.
And I had the original. I had the original CRT. I had the original disk drive. I had the original everything.
Wow, the 1541 and all the magic noises that it made.
Yep.
You know, one of these days I'm going to buy one and I'm just going to, you know, put a menudo in the background, which is what you would hear in the Puerto Rican, you know, homes back in the 80s, which is rock out with my 664. Wow. So you are a .NET developer.
Yes. And,
you know, and I personally, I used to cringe anytime I say those words because I used to have a big prejudice, my English is not very good looking, so I apologize for that. So I used to be very, I thought that .NET developers, it's not that they were below me, but that they had given up on technology. Because they were doing Microsoft tech, but .NET is now on a period where it's just morphing into something worth spending or investing your time into. And I'm actually investing time with .NET Core and F#, all those things. Now, as someone who has a .NET background, how do you see this playing out? How do you see this approach to open source? Do you see Microsoft, this Microsoft intent to sort of captivate the market? How do you see that playing out?
You know, I really think it's I really think .NET is having a huge renaissance right now, and .NET is expanding in ways that we could have never imagined, even 3 or 4 years ago. Because the ecosystem keeps getting better and better and better.
And that's true. It actually looks to me like .NET is one of these. It's an open source language. I know .NET is a framework, but that at least F#, from my point of view, I don't know C#, but F# at least looks like it's an open source language.
Right.
And that is pretty exciting and surprising.
Yeah. And I think what differentiates .NET from something like Java is obviously, not just technical differences, but the entire way that the project is managed and the project is shepherded are completely different, because you don't have to worry about you don't have to worry about Microsoft going off on a tangent and completely stomping on what people want.
That's true.
And I know with Java, and especially with Sun, and then once they were bought by Oracle, that became more and more of a concern as time went on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even you look now, people are worried about Java as an ecosystem because of how certain things are being handled. There was a big rebellion about what is it, adding modules or adding some bit to the language? And there was a, there was a big rebellion in terms of finalizing the specification for that. And you would never see that you would never imagine seeing that in anything .NET related, because, Microsoft, for all of, you can say whatever else you want about Microsoft, but because they built .NET for developers, they've taken great care to be good stewards of .NET as an ecosystem and not just as a way to sell more Visual Studio licenses.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's a really great point. You know, my big issue with Java, and you're going to notice that I have issues with all of the enterprise, what are called enterprise languages. I have issues with them because there are religions formed around them. And, you know, Java, within the Java religion, there's like 5,000 sects. Right. And you don't really know what's happening if you're not within a specific echo chamber, which, let me tell you, they're all echo chambers.
Right.
If you're not within that specific module, let's say, you're really not going to care about anything else here. You're not going to get a good grasp of everything. Microsoft with .NET has definitely done a better job, you know, and this is where Microsoft shines. Microsoft has always been a copycat.
Yeah.
That's the truth. You know, this is not me criticizing them. They see something that works, they iterate on it, and they improve it. And, you know, .NET is a great example of them iterating on that enterprise framework that they had and say, okay, enterprise is dead as we know it. Let's go with the model that killed it, which is open source.
Yeah, and you know, what a great coup that Microsoft pulled off back in, what was it, 98, 99, to get Anders Heilsberg away from Borland.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
It has
a very colored history. And Microsoft being Microsoft, they will not quit. Microsoft is like a tsunami.
Yeah.
They will just come and...
Hello?
And we'll take that market. Like what they're doing with Azure. They are... Oh my God, I thought that Azure was this old, complicated piece of garbage because it used to be like that back when I tried it. And now I'm like, wow,
you know,
this is pretty nice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a C#, I you say that, you told me that you are mostly professionally, you're a C# developer, right?
Yeah.
So where do you see C# playing out in this whole scenario, or you know, in Microsoft's agenda? How do you see moving toward? And let me ask, you know, like a following question: given the existence of F#, do you see them, or how do you see them playing out? How do you see them like birthing another language, or do you see them like crossing over? Like, what do you see there?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Are you surprised?
No. No. I think it's a very intelligent question. But,
well, it didn't come from me. I took it from Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. Just go ahead.
Well, I think C# will, you know, C# has always been really great at evolving well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, adding things like, you know, lambdas and generics and link and, you know, all of these kinds of things, you know, and they've always been really good at keeping up as a language to add new features and make sure those features are well represented within .NET as an ecosystem. And I have every bit of confidence that will continue to be the case. I think because C# and F#, you know, I think they will both continue to evolve, and because they are both, you know, .NET languages, they run on the CLR, I think that, you know, both of them will have full freedom to continue to evolve independently and still be able to interoperate with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious. I personally don't enjoy getting my hands dirty with C Sharp.
Uh-huh.
Because it follows the Java meme of writing OOP code.
Right.
Just because, you know, classes of a class. I mean, it has right. more classes than a school. Right?
Right.
And I find that real annoying. And everything is an object. And yeah. unless you learn the APIs well, there's no way that you're going to get around, right. you know, and write some code. And I've been doing Python for a couple of years now amongst other languages. And I come to realize that Python takes a lazy approach. And it's not the best approach, but it's right. the lazy approach where, you know, with little, you can do a lot.
Right.
Whereas here, you are expected to know a lot in order to do a little.
Right, yeah.
And that's something that actually turns me off about F-sharp too, but F-sharp is a little more, I guess, interesting, given that it's functional and it's an ML, you know, based yeah. language and all that. So C-sharp, it will continue being object oriented.
Yeah.
And it might get a little bit more functional or flavor, I guess.
Yeah, and I have every expectation that it will, because they've been surprisingly good at importing good functional ideas and making them work. Mm-hmm. You know, and making them integrate well without it seeming slapped on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because look, with C Sharp, what was it, 3.0, when Link was first added, you know, they integrated that with the rest of the ecosystem really well.
That's true.
You know,
It felt like when you buy a car, it felt like one of those options
that
normally you wouldn't get, but it's right there. You can use it.
Right.
So you mentioned before we started toying with Haskell.
Yes.
And I told you that I personally don't enjoy Haskell that much.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really fit my, you know, my thinker style right now. And that's not a comment on Haskell. That's a comment on me. Right. That's where I am right now. So what calls you about Haskell? What attracts you to it?
I think it's a completely different way of thinking about programming that most people would never even think existed. And it's, you know, once, even if you never actually use Haskell itself all that much, you know, the lessons that you can learn about programming itself from knowing about how Haskell does things is, in my opinion, very important.
Sure.
So that was what drove me to Haskell, into kind of what we call pure functional languages.
So you would say that your insistence on learning new things and figuring out new ways to do things drove you to try and see the world from another perspective, you know, in terms of programming.
Yeah.
We share that. I feel that I'm probably not smart enough for Haskell. and, you know, sometimes I even question if I'm smart enough to operate a microwave. You know, that says a lot about me, but not about Haskell. I've tried it a couple of times, but I just can't deal with the overhead of the mental overhead and the mental gymnastics that you have to do in order to do something simple.
Oh, right.
For example, you have to, you know, right off the bat, what is a monad?
Yeah.
Right off the bat, functors, monads, yep. monoids, yep. combinators.
Yeah.
And these are not, they're more common now, but they weren't common things, you know, outside of academia or outside of people who were really interested in the leveling on programming, you know, for the run of the mill programmer.
Yeah.
That was just hocus pocus.
Yeah. And to be honest, they're still not all that common, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if it hadn't been for Scott Nimrod and him pushing me into functional, I wouldn't really have, you know, cared to learn a lot of the terms. I knew what a monad was and, you know, combinator and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I really didn't care for it because when it came to being productive, when it came to shipping software that made money, that wasn't really important because I leveraged, you know, years of experience to build robust software that could then go on and make money and, you know, like bring home the bacon. So
right, yeah,
it wasn't really important to me. It's not until this journey with Scott Nimrod a little bit before that I realized it. And this, you know, I spent a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I spent 2 years toying with Common Lisp.
And
I did not know, like I learned all these things at the code level, but I didn't know, you know, anything else. I know that you did this way, and I copied the patterns, and I learned by reading a lot of code, because back then, that's all there was.
Yep.
There weren't tutorials, there wasn't no YouTube, there, you know, none of that. And now that I'm back into functional and learning all these things, I'm like, you know, this is Lisp. Like, Lisp was already doing this. I was doing this with Lisp a long time ago, and
What turned me on to Common Lisp was Peter Seibel's book, Practical Common Lisp.
Mm-hmm. So you've toyed with Lisp?
Yep.
And it blows your mind, right?
Oh yeah. And it's funny, when I was taking. When I was taking theory of programming languages in college, because I had studied the history and whatever of all these different languages, I was able to do really well on the exams.
Oh, wow.
And the professor would tell stories, and because I knew all the history, I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember. I know exactly where he's going with this. Everybody else was like, what the?
So, you know, that's a great point. Sometimes when we have this inner passion for something, be it programming, cars, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We're automatically ahead of the curve. And I feel like I'm cheating because, you know, it makes me feel like, not that I'm better than others or that I'm above them, but it makes things so much simpler. Like you said, you know, when people talk about something and I've already done it, I'm like, yep, that's really awesome. And I'm there. And I mean, I'm 38 years old. I wrote my first line of code about when I was about 7 years old and I haven't really stopped. So I have years upon years of frustration to talk about. So, you know, you mentioned being, you know, focusing on ASP.NET.
Yep.
And for me, you know, I'm also a web guy, API guy.
Yeah.
I moved away from the desktop years and years and years ago and never looked back. So, how do you know, there's this framework that we're using called Giraffe.
Yeah.
That builds on top of, it's a micro framework that uses, I think, ASP.NET Core. I don't know the full name under Core. Leverage those components to build a micro framework. How do you see now with open source you know, being sort of the main player in Microsoft agenda or playbook, how do you see ASP.NET working out and competing with this, with all these other frameworks?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good question. I think because .NET is open source now, that they are able to iterate a lot faster than they used to. And they're able to integrate a lot more new stuff a lot faster than they ever had before.
So you're saying that they can iterate and copy patterns from other frameworks that are also open source and integrated into ASP.NET.
Exactly, yeah. And they, I mean, you know, they implemented OWIN for identity, you know, identity management, and they implemented, you know, they have their own web server now, and they have their own, you know, like I said, they have their own web server that's different from IIS. They have all these, you know, they built it from the ground up to be compatible with, you know, dependency injection and solid and all these other kinds of different best practices that are natively supported now rather than having to depend on libraries or external things. And I think because also with .NET Core specifically, like .NET Core is a lot smaller. And so they have less dependencies on older code than the full .NET framework does. So that's another reason why they're able to iterate as fast as they do.
Okay, that's a great answer, by the way. You know, I hadn't thought of that. You know, they're having this integrated process where you're constantly feeding and consuming.
Yes.
It does provide for a better product for them. And I mean, I guess it also cuts their R&D.
Yeah.
Because you no longer are catching up two years later. You are constantly there, and you can also provide, you know, cutting edge solutions. And that's really, that's some synergy level marketing speak right there. I apologize.
Yeah.
You know, cutting edge there, you know. So you can also like bleeding edge, you know, technology to your enterprise customers. And, you know, I also see, do you see .NET Core and all these frameworks around .NET Core, do you see them wandering into startup land?
Especially with .NET Core, I don't think it's impossible. It's not beyond the realm of possibility, especially because .NET Core is cross-platform, and it's built from the ground up to be cross-platform and to be modular and to be extensible, so you can add and customize so much more than you could have with older versions of, you know, older versions of ASP.NET that were very tied to, you know, very tied to older code.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's definitely you are going to see a lot more adoption from startups, from small businesses, from, you know, not just traditional large enterprise customers.
Mm-hmm. I asked that because I've been using Django for, you know, since forever. And for me, it, you know, like Rails, it's one of those frameworks that allows you to just be productive yesterday. You don't need to write a database layer. You don't need to write authentication.
Right.
Everything is built in, and you can just focus on building a product that makes money. Yes, of course, you don't need that all of the time. But for a big amount of projects, all you need is something like that. So,
right.
This is a follow-up question. So, do you think that adding and this is something that I'm pondering myself to do, you know, through the Lambda Cartel. Do you think that adding, you know, a sort of standard set of components to it, to Core, to ESP.NET Core or to Giraffe or any framework, or publishing a library of sorts, do you think that adding those things will be a net benefit to the ecosystem?
Yeah, because I think if you know you have a standard, like if you know you have a standard base to build on, then you can structure your code around that. And, you know, there's a lot that, especially ASP.NET Core, has out of the box that you don't necessarily have to, you know, import a NuGet package or any kind of arcane wizardry, you know, you literally just pass an argument to a constructor and it's available and done and you don't have to think about it anymore. I think that's a big deal, and I think if you are, regardless of whether you're building line of business apps or you're building, you know, standard CRUD, some kind of CRUD interface, you know, that the fact that you have these standard components is a big win, because, like I say, you can design your architecture around that, and you don't have to wonder, well, what am I going to use for XYZ? Because, you know, there's a hundred different choices.
Exactly, that's a great point. You know, one of the benefits of Django is that I don't need to hunt down a package and see if it's being maintained.
Yeah,
everything that comes within the Django framework, I know it's maintained, and I know it's going to be, if it's the long term release, I know it's going to be maintained, and if I find a bug or need something, I can just open an issue, you know, make a pull request, and you know, and just do that. So that's a great point. And that's, I think, something that's missing from .NET Core, the fact that there's still a lot of fragmentation.
Yeah. Well, they're working on fixing that.
Yeah. But that's, I think, a secondary, you know, that's just a secondary issue to everything else. Right. And, you know, I think we're doing a great job. So do you think, and this is a question from the left of field, right? So do you think Microsoft is going to come out with a new language that, you know, to battle Kotlin and to battle Swift in the next couple of years?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't necessarily know. I don't necessarily think they're going to invent a whole separate language, but what I think they might do is make that sort of thing available to languages that they already support. So they might add C# or F# support for a thing like that, or even you know, TypeScript, who knows? But I don't think they would create a whole separate language just for doing Android, for example, or just for doing mobile, when we already have Xamarin, and we can already do, you know, we can already do 95% of what we would have done in a language like Kotlin with C# already as it is.
So
I think if anything, I think if anything, they would enhance the languages that they already have to support that scenario rather than building something brand new from scratch.
So you mentioned Xamarin. I don't know if you have an experience with Xamarin. I've just looked at it. I haven't done anything.
Yeah, yet. I've played with it a little bit, but I wouldn't call myself an expert.
Yeah, exactly. I've toyed with it. I looked at it. I read it. But for me, the fact that Microsoft doesn't really have a mobile platform of its own, it just says, like, I don't need that, right? Like I can do that with JavaScript and be done.
Yeah.
So how do you see? So for me, it's really interesting, and I'm asking all these sort of questions because you are within this ecosystem. So you have a perspective that I don't, right? Because I'm an outsider within .NET. I just arrived. You know, I used to be a .NET developer a long time ago. I spent some time doing .NET development professionally, but I got tired of it.
Yeah.
And I found, you know, a calling in other languages.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not like crapping on it, right? That's just for me. That was my journey, not necessarily same as others. So how, I'm just interested in your point of view. So how do you see within all of this open source approach, all this MIT license code that they have, you know, VS Code, all those things, how do you see mobile working out? Like, because they don't have a mobile platform,
right?
And they don't want to adopt Android because they haven't said that, but that's how I read it. They don't want to support anything from Google,
right?
How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think based on what I've seen coming out of things like the build and the you know, the build conference that they have for developers and things like that. I think what they most try to do is build workflows for mobile platforms that already exist, rather than try to push something of their own. You know, because like I said, Windows Phone, you know, isn't really a thing anymore.
Which is a pity, it was really good.
Yeah.
I really like Windows phones, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I probably would have bought a Windows phone if they'd actually supported it for more than one or two releases. You know?
Yeah, I feel the same.
And it's funny, because one of my ex-bosses, she was like diehard a Windows Phone user, and she wrote her own Windows Phone apps, and like that was her thing.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
you know, and it does bring into light that we as technology authors and creators, we really got to take into account the people who use it.
Yeah,
you know, I still have really old code on GitHub that I haven't even looked at in easily more than a year and a half, but I still get emails, you know, from GitHub of people asking questions. And sure, yeah, I reply to the issues and I just tell them like, hey, you know, fork it and do whatever you want. I'm not maintaining this anymore.
Right.
But it's, you know, but we owe that to people. Right. So let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about, you know, we talk about .NET, we talk about all these things, and your perspective has been enlightening, at least for this, you know, for me, because I'm an outsider. So let's talk about your programming journey.
Sure.
What's the worst bug you've ever encountered? And did you fix it? And how did you fix it?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
that's a nail biter.
Yeah. One of the most insidious that I can remember. One of the most insidious that I can remember is we had a data-driven one of the jobs I worked at. We had a data-driven blog section for one of the websites that we were maintaining, and we had a terrible issue where not every blog post would always show up in the order that they were created in, or they wouldn't show up at all. So I had to do quite a bit of digging around, digging around SQL Server and digging around SQL Server logs, and digging around, IIS logs to try to figure out, okay, well, why isn't this rendering like it should? And it took me like a week and a half to try to figure out what went wrong. And to be honest, I think it was just I think it was just a from what I remember, it was just a quirk in SQL Server and the way SQL Server interfaced with that version of ASP.NET, because I was able to do some poking around and I was able to get it to work, but it was kind of one of those things where, like, okay, I fixed it, it works, but I'm still not sure why.
It's like when you smack your when you used to smack your TV and the signal came back. Back when we didn't have flat panel TVs and LEDs, you used to just smack it and the signal came back and I'm like, hey, I fixed it. Or blowing your NES cartridge, and those are the worst ones because you don't know what fix it. Well, you know what fix it, but you're not entirely sure, and they haunt you.
That was the biggest example that came to mind, right off the top of my head.
Has it ever happened to you that you're driving or you're walking around and suddenly you start thinking about that? You're like, oh, I wish I could fix it, or I wish I knew what was the solution, or does that ever happen to you? Like,
Well, not yeah. In general, yes, because it's kind of human nature to be haunted by your mistakes
yeah,
and
that's
to be
true.
haunted by the things that you either didn't do or didn't do as well as you could have. If only I could go back and if only I knew then what I know now. I think that's pretty common, regardless of if you work in tech or not.
That's true. I have, aside from being a programmer, I'm also a mechanic. I became a master mechanic
Oh, nice.
some decades ago, I think. And I still think back about those scars that I couldn't really solve the problem, and I had to refer the customers to somebody else because you try to troubleshoot something, but it's outside of your experience or expertise, and you just simply have to refer it. Just like when you encounter a bug and you can fix it, you gotta ask somebody else for help, right? That's the same thing. So what's next for John Best? What is that next challenge or that next mountain that you want to conquer?
Well, I think in terms of professionally, I definitely want to do more with open source. I've been dipping my toes into it recently, but I definitely want to do more with it. I definitely want to be more of a designer where I build something from scratch and build a design, build an architecture from scratch rather than only being a maintenance developer. And I want to continue to grow my skills as far as being full stack. I want to get better with SQL Server. I want to get better with JavaScript. I want to get better in just software engineering in general, because it's called engineering for a reason. And I think it's the more I can learn from others, the better off I'll be. If It goes back to the old Isaac Newton quote, if I see, it is only because I stand on the shoulders of giants.
That's true. That's you true. I can share that feeling because I was thinking the other day and actually tweeted about it, like, if it weren't for open source, I would not be a programmer. I got a C64. Yes, when I was a kid, I was really, really, really lucky. Believe me, I was like in Puerto Rico in 1986 to get a computer in your home. That's just it's like having, I don't know. It's like running and finding $1 million.
Yeah,
that's it. That's crazy.
Yeah, or owning a Rolls Royce or something.
Exactly, like, or winning the birth lottery. That's
yeah.
I won the birth lottery with my parents. I didn't win it, you know, by being born in Puerto Rico. Not that I hate the island or anything, right? But let me be clear. But yeah. I won it with my parents. I won it with my family. And you know, if it hadn't been for open source, if it hadn't been for Linux, if it hadn't been for the works of RMS of Richard Stallman, and the new project and all those things, I wouldn't be where I stand. And certainly Microsoft really didn't make it easy for you to program back then.
Right.
And neither did Oracle or any of these big companies, because if you wanted to play with Visual Studio, Visual Studio Express was not a thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And Oracle had, I believe, Delphi.
Yep.
No. Oracle had NetBeans, I think.
And
that was not a thing. And Delphi was out there, which was Pascal with a tie.
Yeah, and that was very much a Borland thing.
Yes, but it wasn't free. So if it hadn't been for open source, for Python, for Lisp, for all these languages, I would be, I was going to say I would have been a worse programmer than I am now, but I don't think it's possible for me to be any worse than I am, right? Oh, my God. So we have about 10 minutes left to go. And, you know, John, you mentioned talking about wanting to dive more into open source.
Yeah.
And I'm going to openly and personally, invite you to, open a project and, just look at what we're doing at the Lambda Cartel.
Okay.
Look at the things that we're doing. I know that you forked Nikeza.
Yeah.
I think you were the first person outside of us to fork Nikeza. And I was pretty pumped. I'm like, finally, there's some life out there.
Right.
Just don't look at the code that I wrote. What I would love to collaborate with you. And I know that your strong suit right now is C#.
Yeah.
And I know that Scott Nimrod, Scott Nimrod, I want to make this comment the right way. So Scott Nimrod is a big proponent for F# because it makes the correct assumptions. Like he says, this is built in a way that correctness is the priority.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put words into his mouth, but from what I've heard, his criticism of C# is that, although it has a compiler, although it has all those things, it's not as a strong when it comes to types as F#, right? Yeah. So, but I still want to have somebody that's outside of this functional bubble come in and build something.
I'll be happy to come in with a needle and go pop.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, because if you're, and I'm gonna take another, you know, of Scott's sayings. You know, if you're not destroying your belief system constantly, if you're not rebuilding that belief system, if you're not challenging, you know, your limits, if you're not pushing yourself to the limit, then you're not really growing, and that's true. So yeah, I want to see a C-sharp project from you. You're welcome to do it.
Yeah.
And let's start really small, really minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see where that goes. So the invitation is out there. And you know, and so last question.
All right.
You've been a supporter of the Lambda Cartel pretty much since we started.
Yeah.
Mostly because you follow on Twitter, on social media.
Yep.
I think most of the members, if not all.
Yeah.
So what do you think about it so far? Like, what's your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I think you guys are really onto something. I think you guys are definitely on the right track when it comes to talking about software, when it comes to talking about functional programming, when it comes to talking about open source, when it comes to building tools and building systems from lots of different components, rather than just saying, oh, well, we're only going to be tied to this ecosystem, or we're only going to be using this, or, you know, because yeah, you use F#, but you also use Python, you also use, you know, PowerShell, you also use, you know, Docker and all these other things. So
yeah, we use Elm.
Yep.
And I know that the recent, you know, the JavaScript, you know, dialect, I think it made its way into the Kesa code base somehow. Yeah, somebody let it in. I don't know who it was, but I'm looking for him. So, you know, I appreciate those words because, well, you know, when we started, I immediately understood that the Lambda Cartel, aside from being, you know, a group of nerds building software, because that's what we are. Let's not kid ourselves, you know.
Right.
You know, aside from being a group of professional developers building software together, open sourcing it, I knew that this was a platform that we could use to not only talk about our experiences and document, you know, our process and all that, but to also bring some light into the actual development process.
Yeah.
Outside of the whole agile bubble and Scrum ecosystem, which I hate it. I don't hate agile and Scrum. I just hate my experiences with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
it's easy. It's easy to do poorly and hard to do well.
Exactly. You know, it's easy to be so bad at agile.
The ideas themselves are sound, but they take a lot of effort when it comes to being able to execute them well.
Yes, it's like I tell my wife, like, the idea of dating me wasn't that bad. It's not until you actually dated me that you make an error. You know, the ideas, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
You know, we have this saying that, you know, from imagination to implementation.
Yeah.
Right? So we imagine these things, and the Kesa itself has been a journey worth 1,000 books.
Yeah.
You know, when we ship out 1.0, when that comes out, I'm going to just share with everybody the process. And we're going to do, you know, we're going to look back and talk about all the mistakes.
Yep.
And all the errors. Not because we want to, you know, like vent.
Right.
But because we want people to get more out of that.
Yeah.
And to say, these guys did that, and these are the signals that they were seeing at that specific moment. So, you know, and Nikesa, let me tell you, that's...
Also, related to that, I've seen a lot of developers live streaming their coding on Twitch.
Mm-hmm. We're mostly on YouTube.
Yeah.
And Scott Nimrod and Odie Tries, I know that Mitchell Tilburg, who is another dev, he also does that. I don't know if Adam Wright has done it, but I know Adam. So Adam Wright, one of the members, he has this project called F Sharp for C Sharp developers. I don't know if you know about that.
I did not, but I talked to Adam.
You have to check it out.
Gonna say I talked to Adam a lot, so I should know about that. Damn.
Oh my God, it's a really great website. It's something that I've been pushing him to continue doing, because I think it's necessary, right?
Yeah.
To have like that perspective, and when going from F Sharp, you know, from C Sharp to F Sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, but the Lambda Cartel, you know, I appreciate all the nice words. It's one of the reasons we do it. It's one of the reasons that.
Well, yeah, and you guys are really good at at cannibalizing the best parts of lots of different things and making and making the sum of all of that even better than their individual parts.
The jury is still out on that one.
well, based on what I can see, I'll stand by that statement.
You know, it's been a journey, and we have Nikesa that we started doing together, and you know, because life gets in the way, some people focus more on it, you know, for a period, then they pull back, and some other people do it. But the big proponent, like the big driving force behind Nikesa, has been Scott Nimrod. Mm-hmm. And the guy's just amazing to look at. Like, you just shut up and just read his code. Like, it's like seeing, you know, it's just like watching, you know, the Bob Ross show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see a canvas and he just puts some colors, you know, like he's going to mess up the painting. And suddenly you have a really nice portrait of the beach.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And I think like Scott Nimrod is the Bob Ross of code. And I don't know if he's gonna like that that comparison, but he's just like that. It's just amazing. Like I read the Nikesa code every day and see like what people are committing. I just learn from that. And there's so many libraries that are gonna come out of that code base that it's crazy. So we have a minute to go. You know, John, has been a really great episode. This new format that we're trying out, I'm glad that I think it was the best decision to have you be the first guest. You know, I always enjoy talking with you on Twitter and interacting and all this, and we certainly have one of the best GIF threats ever. And I have to say, you know,
I think Adam especially is in awe of both of us.
Yeah. And you know, it's gonna sound like, you know, like a bromance here. But I gotta say, you know, you're 27 now, like you said.
Yep.
I definitely expect a lot of great things from you when it comes to code, to open source, because you have this amazing approach to life and this amazing approach, you know, and this amazing attitude towards things. And it's just, I expect so many great things. And I feel blessed that you are part of this journey. And so with that in mind, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
And I want to tell everybody out there, if you're listening to this podcast, let me just ask you why. And no, I'm sorry. Bad joke. So if you're listening to this podcast, let me tell you that John Best is not only you know, a really great programmer and someone that we you know, that is in love with programming and computers, but it's also someone that you should you know, reach out and meet on social media. And someone that you should definitely, definitely, definitely consider working with, because John is just a pleasure to talk with and to be with. So, John, I know that you're that you're not, you know, that's not something that you asked me to say.
No, but I did not.
But I wanted to put it out there because I like to build people up, right? Yeah. I don't like to destroy people. I like to build
right.
people. So with this in mind, I have to say this, you know, I say this on every episode, that this was the best show ever.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually one of the best shows ever.
Yeah, and not just because I'm here.
I think it was because you were here. So let's do some A/B testing for the next show. Let's have you as the host. Somebody else. Let's remove me from the equation. All right. So thank you so much, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Very much.
Do you have anything to say before we go?
I would just like to say that if you are new to your own programming journey, whatever you do, keep going, because it's so worth it, and there are so many people who would love to help you and to help you be better than you are, than better than you ever thought you could be. So if you're, whether you're just starting or you've been in the game for a while, you know, always keep striving to move forward, and I guarantee you there are people that are available to help you regardless of what stage you're in on your journey. So
wow.
You know,
I could have I aspire to someday statement like that one, because let's just end the show with that. So thank you everybody for listening to the Landberg Hotel podcast. This has been John Best and Pablo Rivera as your host. Thank you so much and take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Take care.